Mickey K. Mr. Arndt, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Ted Arndt. I represent the state of Nebraska in this case. And the state of Nebraska has filed this appeal for the purpose of seeking to uphold the law in this case. The state would argue that the relevant statute was not properly followed by the court and was not properly interpreted by the court. Therefore, it is the state's position that it has a duty to appeal the district court's ruling because the statute was not properly interpreted or followed.
Mr. Arndt, before you get to that, I want to ask you briefly about jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor.
This was commenced by the state as a proceeding to establish support orders. The alleged or acknowledged father appeared, filed an amended answer with a counterclaim and cross-claim that asserted two claims, one of which was disestablishment as to one child, the other of which was support and custody and visitation as to the other child. So far, so good, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
The order from which you purport to appeal decided only one of those issues. Under Section 251315, is this not yet a final appealable order until all of the claims are disposed?
Your Honor, the state would argue that it is a final order because the statute which the state would look at would be 251902, which says that an order that affects a substantial right
in a special proceeding, you're relying solely upon a Type 2 final order.
Well,
it's not a Type 1 or a Type 3, right?
That would be the state's argument, that it was a substantial right that was affected, being parental rights.
Well, under 1902, there are three types. The first one prevents a judgment, the second one in a special proceeding, and the third one a summary application after judgment. It's not one or three. You're contending it's number two, affects a substantial right in a special proceeding.
Yes, Your Honor.
But even those, doesn't our case law say that when you have multiple claims and multiple parties, even though you may have what would be a 251902 final order, it still isn't appealable until all claims are disposed unless the court makes the special finding?
Well, I would argue that it could fall into the first section because it prevents a judgment. Once the court found that he's not the biological father.
Okay. Then for the purposes of the argument, I'm just going to let you claim that it's a final order under 251902. My question, though, is that you haven't answered is how do you get around 251315?
Because I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Essentially, you have two cases here, one for one child and one for the other child.
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. The state's concern in this case is once the court determined that he was, if you look at the language of the order is very final in its statements. It says, it is further ordered that the defendant shall have no legal obligation of a parent to be recognized as a parent to the minor child. And it says, it is further ordered that the prior legal determination establishing the defendant's paternity of the minor child through the defendant's execution of acknowledgement of attorney is hereby set aside. So that puts the state in a position where that issue is determined, and there's really nowhere for the state to go on that issue. So if you look at the subsequent order that was entered, there was no contest that issue was going to be addressed. That issue was decided. So to preserve the appeal, that's why the state filed this case. The ultimate issue in this case is how the court should define fraud and paternity disestablishment. The Nebraska Section 1409 states that after a session period, a signed notarized acknowledgement is considered a legal finding, which may be challenged only on the basis of fraud, duress, or material mistake of fact. with the burden of proof to be on the challenger. In this
is
case,
there a material mistake of fact here?
No, Your Honor. I don't think there was a material mistake of fact in the signing of the acknowledgement because in the...
I'm referring to the fact that he's now discovered through DNA that he's not the father.
Yeah, I would argue that there was no material mistake of fact because when he signed the acknowledgement, he signed it in part because he was concerned about the potential biological father coming in and making an assertion of paternity. So when he signed the acknowledgement, he knew that there was another potential father. So there was no material mistake of fact. He signed the acknowledgement knowing that there was another potential father. Turned out there was. And so there's no material mistake of fact in this case. And then when you talk about the issue of fraud, the state would argue that there was evidence to indicate that there was no fraud in this case, and the primary element of fraud is justifiable reliance on a false representation. In this case, there's plenty of evidence to indicate that there was no justifiable reliance. That is because, as I stated earlier, the father indicated in his testimony that he's aware of the biological father's potential paternity claim and wanted to protect the child from himself and such a claim. Therefore, again, he knew that there was another potential biological father, yet he freely chose to sign.
How did the district court interpret the fraud element?
The district court made a finding that the record was replete with fraud. And the order said whether it's fraud perpetrated by the third-party defendant upon defendant, or fraud perpetrated upon the minor child, or fraud perpetrated by defendant or third-party defendant upon the biological father, the record is replete with fraud.
What do you think under the statute fraud means? Who's the object of the fraud under the statute?
The state would say would think that the fraud would have to be. The object of the fraud would have to be the challenger, which would be the father. So the father would have to prove fraud.
Your point in that regard is that the father can't participate in the fraud and then use fraud as an excuse to disestablish.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Do you agree that that someone was committing fraud on someone in the process?
Well, I mean,
for example, today's challenger was part of almost a conspiracy to commit fraud on the real father. Is that a possibility here?
It's possible, but the issue is that when the challenger would be the challenger has to prove the fraud, and the challenger can't assert the claim of the I don't think the statute would allow the challenger to assert the claims of another party, which would be the biological father in this case. The biological father hasn't asserted fraud, so that's why the state would argue that it's improper for the court to find fraud.
Biological father is not a party to the case.
Right.
Nobody allowed him to be joined as a party. Somebody sought to join him, but that never happened.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
So the state would close by saying the weight of the evidence indicates that at the time the acknowledgement was signed, the legal father knew that he was not the biological father of the child and had reason to believe that there was a good chance that he was not the biological father based upon his own statements. Therefore, the fact that he was there when the child was born and may have believed that he was the father when the child was born, it should not have much effect on the determination of the court as to whether there was fraud in this case.
What's our standard of review regarding the disestablishment portion of this?
Well, there's a question of fact, and there's Also, the question of how, of the fraud and the order that was entered. So, I would argue it would be de novo, and then for clear error on the question of fact.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Head, good morning to you.
Please report, Chief Justice Trevican, Supreme Court Justices. My name is Willow Head, and I represent the appellee, Ricky Knowles, in this matter. With regards to, Justice, your question as far as this being a final order, I do believe that the order that the state appealed from was not the final order. They appealed from the June 19, 2017 order. Ultimately, the court entered a final order on September 6, 2017. Originally, if you look procedurally at the pleadings in this matter, the case was never bifurcated. Mr. Knowles is the biological father of Ricky Jr., and that was never contested. Mr. Knowles is not the biological father of Marcello, and that was the issue and is the issue here before the court. The case is not bifurcated. If it is not separated in some way, shape, or form, I believe the final order, therefore, was entered on September 6, 2017, which the state did not file a notice of appeal from.
If the order from which appeal was taken, the June 19 order, was in fact a final order, and an appeal was timely taken, and you would concede it was, the appeal was filed within 30 days, right?
Yes, sir.
So, if that were the case, the district court would have been deprived of jurisdiction and would have no jurisdiction to enter the paternity decree in September, right?
Would be true also.
But apparently the district court thought it had jurisdiction because it went ahead and entered the decree, right?
Right, so it entered the decree that, again, reiterated the disestablishment language as to Marcello, and then entered the custody and child support and parenting plan of the other child, Your Honor.
Do you think it makes a difference for purposes of our analysis that when you file the amended answer and counterclaim and cross-claim, that you join what might have been a separate statutory proceeding or disestablishment within the scope of an existing action? Is that significant to our analysis under 25-13-50?
I'm not sure if I follow your question, but I believe that the issue was preserved both within the defense was raised within the answer and counter complaints, and a separate motion for disestablishment was also filed on December 30, 2015. So,
but that wasn't what was referred to the referee, was it?
Yes.
No, I mean, it was your, what you styled as a cross-complaint that was referred to the referee.
It was, I believe it was the motion that was filed on December 30th, because that motion was ultimately set for a hearing, and that's when the state of Nebraska asked that it be referred to the referee's office, and the district court then referred it down, just that portion of the case, referred it down to the referee.
That motion was premised on Chapter 43, Section 1409,
yes,
which is not the disestablishment statute, is it?
It's
1412.01, that's the disestablishment statute.
Your Honor, with regards to, and I'm just going to refer to my notes briefly here, the 1409 talks about setting aside notarized acknowledgments, the 43-1409, because the 43-1412 talks about genetic testing being able to set aside judgments, paternity findings. Here, there was no previous paternity determination. There was no child support order. All we have is the acknowledgement of paternity. Therefore, I believe that 43-1409 applies and not 43-1412. Therefore,
I don't think we ever said that. This is new ground, isn't it? We've never said that 1409 is the right proceeding
to challenge this establishment.
Well, the statute itself indicates that the only way that acknowledgement of paternity can be challenged after the 60-day rescission period is to challenge it on the basis of fraud, duress, and material.
But that section does not establish the disestablishment procedure. It just states the grounds on which an acknowledgement could be attacked.
So we said in Cesar versus Felician that this is the meaning of an acknowledgement. You know, as an evidentiary matter in a proper proceeding rather than a basis for a proceeding.
Right, okay. That's interesting. So, in any event, I believe that even if you get past the jurisdictional issues, Mr. Knowles has properly challenged the acknowledgement and properly met his burden for the disestablishment.
We've not previously interpreted the language of the statute with respect to fraud, duress, and mutual mistake, have we?
Not directly. I believe in the Jeremy case as well as Cody L. case, I think it has been inferred.
But other states have. Right. Other states have looked at fraud, and many other states have held it can't be the putative father who's participating in fraud. That can't be the fraud that the statute's talking about. Why shouldn't we follow that chain of precedent?
Well, although the Supreme Court did not address it in Cody L., they also did not find plain error. So, in that case, both parties apparently knew that they were not the biological father and proceeded to go forward with the disestablishment. However, in this case, the testimony by Mr. Knowles is not what the state of Nebraska purports. He stated that the mother told him he was the father. The mother called him to the hospital because he was the father. The mother left with him because he was the father. The child was raised knowing that my client was the father.
Did the guardian ad litem present evidence of inconsistent statements by your client?
She made, not in evidence, she made a comment, I believe an argument on the record during the hearing, but it wasn't within her reports, and ultimately her recommendations agreed that this establishment should occur and that it was in the best interest of this minor child.
So what she said at that point during the hearing was not while she was under oath?
Correct. It was not.
Thank you. So your argument is there's a factual dispute here?
Yes, sir. As far as what my client knew, believed to know, so I believe that the definition of fraud has been met. My client went in signing the acknowledgement.
Why does that go to material mistake of fact?
It could go to either. I mean, DNA later proves that he is not the father. He was 20 when he signed this form and raised his child. And his actions say, you know what, I'm going to step up. I've been told I'm the father, I'm going to assume my responsibilities. If he was not the father, I don't know what other 20-year-old would stick around and raise someone else's child. So the state can argue all at once that my client knew or should have known or whatever, but the fact is he testified under oath that he thought he was the dad. For some reason, the state wants to portray my guy as the bad guy. The mother here is the one that lied on the acknowledgement, lied to my client, lied to the child,
and lied to the biological father. She committed fraud. She had a reason not to tell the truth during the hearing because potentially the state could come back after her because she's the one receiving the state aid. So when you're looking at the credibility and who's got a reason to maybe not tell the truth during the hearing, as well as when you look at Mr. Knoll's behavior and actions after the birth of this child, it is apparent that he was led to believe that he was the father.
Do we owe any deference to the referee's findings regarding credibility?
No. If anything, you owe deference to the trial court. Because the case, I think it's Lockwood, and a recent case the Supreme Court came out with, Beecher, says you give zero deference to the referee's findings. The trial court does not have to interpret anything from the recommendations made by the referee. It can come to its own conclusions.
Let me ask you a broader question. What do you understand is the purpose of the 43-1409?
The purpose of 43-1409 deals with the acknowledgement of paternity form, how it can be rescinded and or challenged at a later point in time after the rescission process.
So from a legislative standpoint, what are they after? Just get somebody to support kids?
Well, part of my argument, if you will, against the state of Nebraska is we're allowing the state of Nebraska to pick and choose who they want to go after for child support. It's very easy to go after Mr. Knowles. He's employed by the federal government. And has a job. Biological father, maybe not. So to give the power to the state to decide, you know what, I'm going to go after this father because I can, legal father and not the biological father, I think is an abuse of power. I also think it creates issues for the child when a child is subjected to, now I have a legal dad, now I have a bio dad, I potentially will have a stepdad, will I have an in-local parentis dad? I mean, when we're talking about preservation of the family unit and where this is going to take us, we're subjecting this child to conflict in court, how many different parenting plans, how many different, Father's Day does he have to visit?
But that's unusual for children. I mean, there's a lot of children who have more than one father, right?
Right, but for the state of Nebraska to dictate how many fathers you have because they decide they want to go after this person for child support because they can, when they know who the biological father is and they have their address, their work information, besides the fact that the mother and my client both agree. I mean, that cannot be understated. They both agree that disestablishment should occur in this case. This is not a case where the mom wants Mr. Knowles to be involved, or Mr. Knowles says, you know what, it's the best interest of Marcello to be involved. The only actor here that's objecting to the disestablishment is the state of Nebraska. I would ask the state of Nebraska, why aren't you going after the biological dad for child support? Why are you causing this turmoil for this family and this child? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on.